This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. Today on the Property Show, we have the first of a two-part interview with Khazanah Research Institute following the release of their Making Housing Affordable report. In the first part, Keith Kamb speaks with Dr. Soraya Ismail, Director of Research, to find out if home ownership is more desirable than renting. All this as we explore the differences between affordable housing and housing that is affordable.
Now, Dr. Soraya, first let's get into home ownership ratio. Malaysia is 72.5% in the affordable housing percentage. That was in 2011. How has the trend been up until that point?
Referring to the 2011 data, that was based on the census data in 2010. Mm-hmm. Since census data is only published every 10 years, I can't really put a finger on the situation now. But if I look at the other data sources, such as the Household Income and Expenditure Survey, it has reported that ownership rate grew to 74.5% in 2012 and later 76.1% in 2014. So it's been trending up.
What are we looking at going forward? Is there a target that the country needs to set?
No. I don't really think we should look at home ownership that way. Because one of the things that we should be looking properly is the rate of urbanization.
Right.
And how would that impact home ownership? Because when we actually look at our data, Kuala Lumpur, because we look at the aggregate 72.5%,
yeah,
but Kuala Lumpur itself is 53%. So the more urbanized city is, the less is the home ownership rate. Now, what we should also be looking at is how easy it is for us to rent at affordable prices as well. So renting and ownership pattern must be looked in a more holistic manner.
Which is kind of like what the trend is like in a lot of developed cities, like I would say London or even New York, where renting a property is more desirable compared to actually owning it. What are your thoughts on this for Malaysia?
No, I disagree that renting is more desirable. It's case by case, Keith.
Yeah.
For example, in Germany, of course, people have been quoting a lot on Germany, whereby they say that renting is 50% of 50% of household.
Yeah.
However, you must understand that because it is a true option, renting is affordable.
Yes.
And that's why people can go into renting, because it's affordable. You can't be saying renting is an option because house prices are expensive. House prices in Germany too is affordable. So you can go in and out of the rental or the property ownership market in such a way that it is a real option, not because you can't afford and
right,
therefore you rent.
Which is why there's this saying that, you know, you should rent where you want to stay and buy where you can actually rent out. Do you agree with that?
I really don't think that's the culture we should be having. Yeah.
Hey, challenges that are faced by the challenges faced by prospective homeowners today. How do you see that trending?
The problem now is that there is a lot of houses that are so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a supply of expensive houses. I mentioned it before in a national daily that, same as the examples of cars, you have cars from Kalisa, Toyota, up until your Mercedes and Bentleys. It should be the same for the housing market. You should have product following what people can afford to buy. It can't be that everybody is squeezed into, you know, home prices, house prices that's 600,000 and above, when definitely not everybody can afford that, especially the 80% of a household in Malaysia.
Choices should be out there for
yes,
people. What about moves by the government, Bank Negara, in ensuring that this rate increase is still manageable?
The real issue is basically having a supply sector that is responsive to what people actually need or demand.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point, basically, when, you know, Bank Negara or other banks wants to give good financing when house prices are, to begin with, expensive.
Right.
So basically, you're giving financing to products that one cannot afford, but you make it affordable by just looking at the mortgage repayment every month. But in totality, people are paying more for things they can't afford. So macroprudential measures cannot be seen as a way to make houses affordable. House prices must go down first. Then only you can do other things. Because the Bank Negara Financial Stability Report mentioned that total household debt as a proportion of GDP, gross domestic product, is now at 88.4% in 2016. That's high. So we should really manage that.
But it is still coming down as far as Bank Negara Governor Dato' Muhammad Ibrahim mentioned a few weeks ago.
89.1% in 2015 to 88.4%. I think, you know, yes, we should do more, you know, better job at this, yes.
Maybe baby steps. No, this seems to make things a little bit worse. There are plans by housing developers. In fact, the Urban Wellbeing Housing Local Government Ministry, they've actually given money lending licenses to house developers, and some of them have actually taken this up, offering what they call bridging loans to help prospective homeowners own homes. What are your thoughts on this?
I think house prices should come down first.
Yeah.
Rather than giving money to support house prices that are going to be more and more expensive.
So how do you think this sort of end financing scheme, you know, that how is it going to help home buyers funding this gap? How is it going to come along?
If you support house prices that's expensive, okay, mm-hmm. and you support it with all these macroprudential measures, at the end of the day, things will get worse because you're asking people to buy items that they can't really afford.
Yes. Now, it's obviously not going to be sustainable, but what is the worst-case scenario do you see for the whole housing sector?
The worst thing that could happen is that we don't see this as a critical call for us to ensure that supply actually matches demand, meaning we don't produce houses that are decent but are affordable. You can produce houses at a lower price.
Mm-hmm.
Studies have shown that even in Singapore, they can reduce house prices by 45%. 45%
right.
In terms of cost of building because they've modernized the construction sector. So this is one of the things we should do first before we go and ensure that people get loans for very high price houses.
Now, modernizing the housing, the construction sector, that I would say there's some efforts being done by the Works Ministry in trying to compel developers to adopt IBS, the industrialized building system, for one. Would you say it's taking a little long for that to take place? They've only got a few years to... They've given a very long time frame for developers to comply with it.
Yes, I agree, Keith. It is too long because, mm-hmm. for example, I look at the other foreign contractors that's coming in,
yeah.
and they can build houses much faster, much cheaper. Now, I think the Kementerian Kerja Jaya is doing a great work to ensure the sustainability
right.
of local firms. Because if you don't buck up, if you don't increase your productivity and give better ranges of product to our local consumers, people will buy from, you know, foreign contractors.
Obviously.
People will buy from foreign developers. And they've got the technology, they've done it. So
yes.
what's stopping us from doing this? Because if we don't get on this bandwagon, we will not be able to compete. And then this will be a sunset industry.
The technology is there to help developers build homes cheaper and more efficiently. Find out more as the conversation with Dr. Suraya Ismail from Khazanah Research Institute continues in a little while. BFM 89.9. The Property Show on BFM 89.9 continues with our conversation with Dr. Suraya Ismail from Khazanah Research Institute, who has revealed that the take-up rate of technology that may help lower construction costs is low. Why is that?
The problem, I think, is it's very low R&D in making sure that they actually produce more modern construction techniques. Because in a project, I'm going to get a bit technical here, yes,
please.
Okay? In a project, you have an architect coming in, a developer, a contractor, engineers, contractors. Now, everybody has their own firm, but they come together for the project.
Right.
The project wants to have modernization. So who bears the cost of that R&D, whereas everybody will get a cut of it because now production is lower.
So in
most developed countries, the developer takes the initiative to invest because they're making the most money in developed countries, of this project. So they then invest in these new techniques. They take a cut in their profit to begin with and then amortize the capital cost of modernizing within the project and other projects that they'll produce. So if they have this mentality, attitude, then our industry will prosper and we as consumers can really get good, decent homes with decent prices because productivity has gone up. And this has been done in most countries, even in the likes of, if I were to give Singapore, I mean, that's a more developed country. In the Philippines, in our book, in Khazanah Research Institute report, we gave the example of Philippines and they've done it and they've managed to build a house for 14 days, this is landed, at a price of 50,000 RM, our money.
It's pretty much a chicken and egg situation over here because if you don't give the developers... if you don't compel them to do something, would you say they are not interested in taking it up?
I ask you one question, Keith. I mean, if other countries, you know, you don't have to compel people to invest in their own businesses, what's wrong with our people here?
This is Malaysia, after all. Now, when we come back to, when we talk about affordable housing, there are already measures in place to compel, to get housing developers to build a proportion, to use a proportion of their development for affordable housing. And yet there is still a shortage, a perceived shortage, I would say. Why do you think that's so?
Sometimes when we actually do... I mean, to begin with, Keith, I don't really agree that we have a category for affordable housing.
Right.
For us in Khazanah Research Institute, we believe that we can make home prices generally more affordable. So if the construction industry were to modernise, if we're very good in our utilisation of R&D, all prices can come down. Yes, that's number one. Now, within that context, making sure that people buy houses that they can afford is a non-issue. I mean, you don't have to put quotas.
Right.
Okay, that's number two. Now, number three, which are the most lucrative items that one can sell? High-end units.
Yes.
High-end units will get, of course, more profit. Now, if people perceive that there will no longer be any affordable homes for them in future, they will start buying these 800, 600,000, the things that we've been seeing for the past 10 years. Now, the moment we say that there is an affordable housing movement, we hope to really reverse this trend, that homes will come to the people at 200,000 to 250,000. And by the way, just to back this by evidence and data, NAPIC figures last year show that this is where most take-up rate has been more than 60% in terms of people buying these homes at 200,000 and 250,000. So the market has given their signal.
And NAPIC is?
Oh, sorry. NAPIC is basically the place whereby all transacted home prices are being captured by the government when you sign your SNP.
Again, it's a chicken and egg situation because if salaries don't go up and house prices rise a lot quicker than salaries rising, you know, that's just going to be a problem that's going to eat into itself. So how do we solve this gap of stagnating salaries and rising house prices?
Okay, to begin with, in terms of the rise of house prices, it's been more rapid than salaries. So basically, there's something going on at house prices. For example, in our report, we showed that the growth for all house price have accelerated between 2009 to 2014 at a CAGR of 10.1%. That's quite high. That's very high. Now, household income has expanded, but basically, the average and median nominal incomes grew at about 10%. But that's in terms of growth. But when you look at absolute baseline, meaning what was the actual price to begin with, house prices are basically very expensive to begin with, starting from 2009, and has been even more so. So it's not really the fact that, you know, growth of income has not been as good. It is house prices has gone up too high.
it's just not in line with how quickly our salaries are, yep, going up. So I hope my boss listens to this. But what sort of solutions does Khazanah prescribe for this?
Again, for the first one that we want to ensure is that, first of all, make sure that house prices are performing at its peak level, meaning there is production efficiency in producing those homes, meaning firms, correct, must ensure. Okay, so by then, we hope that house prices will come down to the level that is effective, to the level that the market will clear. Currently, the market clears at 200,000 and 250,000.
Yes.
That's where people want to buy. Now, the gap between stagnating salaries. Now, we do feel that to increase salaries, you must create, first of all, jobs that have given higher productivity. I mean, if we, you know, laze around in the office and still want higher wages without having higher productivity, it will have inflationary items coming in. It will be inflationary. So this is what we don't want. So any increase in salaries must be backed by productivity. So for each firm, it's up to you to assess how it's going to be done.
So it appears actually that the government via Bank Negara as well, you know, they seem to be trying to cool property prices by putting cooling measures that have been in place since 2010. And yet prices still keep going up. I've actually spoken to other analysts and they say that, you know, if these measures weren't in place, the rise would have been more catastrophic actually. What do you think about that? I mean, are the measures enough or should... what else should be done?
No, I think it's good. No, I think what Bank Negara is doing now is great, because one of the reasons why we have property, bust, is due to rapid price escalation. That is the true reason why properties sectors go bust, and when that rapid escalation is backed by financing. So when you want to honor it and when you sell it, that is not the true value of that property. So when you want to sell, you can't, because you can't recoup that, you know, rapid price escalation.
Right.
So it's an inflated price. Now, when one or two or one segment of the property sector goes into that problem, then the whole sector will crumble, because these are inflated values backed by financing. So these are all, you know, signals that we have learned from countries that have gone through a boom-bust cycle.
Right.
So what Bank Negara is doing now is, to the best of my estimation, correct, trying to make sure that the rapid escalation is not done, is not supported by financing packages. That is very important.
If those measures weren't in place, would we be at risk of a property bust?
Yes, we would be, to the best of my estimation, because of the many other signals. The debt, and people trying to push more sophisticated packages. This all will then support a very inflated and not real price increments. So this, what Bank Negara is doing, is very good.
Given the trajectory property prices are on right now, Bank Negara's cooling measures appear to be timely. Our conversation with Dr. Suraya continues in next week's Property Show on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.